Hello, and welcome back to my love letter time machine, where we are unfolding the Victorian love story contained in the letters of two ordinary people from Yorkshire, Fred Shepherd and Janie Warburton. Hi, I'm Ingrid Birchall-Hughes, and I just happen to be their great-great-granddaughter. Each week, we travel 140 years back in time to discover the latest happenings. And today, the letters come thick and fast in the run-up to Janie and Fred's Easter reunion. And we find out how Fred did in the Cleveland Challenge Cup rematch. Before I begin, I just want to say thank you so much to all my listeners for tuning in every week, for your support, your comments and questions over on the Instagram, and to everyone who's bought me a coffee over on my Ko-fi page. And an extra big thank you to those of you who buy me a coffee every single month. If you'd like to support this podcast financially, you can at Ko-fi, which is ko-fi.com/my-love-letter-time-machine, or one word. And if you'd like to become a monthly supporter, then as a thank you, I'm going to start sending people a copy of one of Fred's letters and one of Janie's first ever letters. That includes the little drawing she did getting on the train. But obviously don't feel pressured to support me financially. I still need you to click on the ratings, leave reviews, or share it with people you think might enjoy it. It really, really helps get the podcast noticed and pushes it up the charts. Anyway, on with the episode. This time, we have several shorter letters being dashed off in haste in the week before Fred's return to Sheffield in the Easter of 1882. I know there are many stories told about the golden age of the postal service concerning the frequency and reliability of the post, and big cities certainly enjoyed multiple deliveries, with London having between 6 and 12 deliveries daily, enabling people to converse during the course of a day. I'm not sure how many deliveries Janie would have got up in the village of Handsworth, but in the week this episode covers, between April the 1st and 7th, 1882, Janie and Fred wrote 8 letters between them with every confidence that they were able to have a dialogue and plan for Fred's arrival back in Sheffield on the 8th. Very few envelopes have survived in the collection of all of Janie and Fred's paperwork, and I don't have any of the envelopes that they use for each other. So I don't know anything about the exact costs, but most of their letters would have cost about a penny. This wasn't the famous penny post, as back in 1874, legislation had updated postal charges so that they were now governed by weight. The first ounce, or 27 grams, was still a penny. 2 ounces was 1.5 pence. And then it was a further 8d for each additional 2 ounces after that. I imagine that this would have been a factor for Janie and Fred, who were in the habit of sending each other the local newspapers, sheet music, and various pamphlets they mention. The pair of them seem to have the time of the last post indelibly stamped upon their memories, and I've noticed they sometimes sign off quickly on a letter they are still writing before rushing to make sure it gets sent. Janie and Fred are still trying to nail down their friends into a trip to Warncliffe for Easter Monday, as Janie mentions in her next. She also responds to Fred's recent mithering over how he is going to set up home for her before she arrives in Middlesbrough, with a very level-headed plan. Handsworth, April the 1st, 1882. My own darling husband, I received your welcome letter this morning. I wish I'd been with you to cheer you up on Thursday night. You must not get downhearted. That will never do, my darling. It must have been the weather. We are having very nice weather now. I am glad my letters do you good, as yours do me, love. I hope Johnny Mies will go with us to Warncliffe. It will be much better than seeing him on the Sunday. I dare say I could go with you on the Tuesday if you decide to see him then, but I would still rather have you all to myself, if you can possibly get on the Monday. Did you ask them to guarantee a fine day? If you remember, our last excursion to Warncliffe was rather damp, but in spite of it, we did enjoy ourselves, didn't we, love? We have had some dear old times, darling, together both in the spring and all year round. I like the spring best of all the seasons. Our courting days have been the happiest of days. I am sure we have had happier than most people. I think it is because we have loved each other thoroughly. We are all in all to each other, my husband, are we not? And we are always going to be true and faithful till death us depart. I wish we could seal that with a kiss like we always used to, darling. They were happy days when we used to have such glorious moonlit walks down Grange Lane. Do you remember the night at the old gate, love? When you told me the old, old story. It was a splendid night. I loved you then, but it was nothing to the love I bear you now, my darling husband. And I hope to show you when I am your dear little wife, and try my best to be a real helpmeet to you, love. I do wish you could be with me to receive the sacrament tomorrow, darling. I feel rather impatient to see you, love. I think this time has gone slower than ever. I wish you could have come over today, but we must wait a little longer, just 1 week. Then, my darling, I shall meet you at the station as normal, and we will spend as much time as possible together. I like to meet you first and see you last, love. I wish I was going back with you. I should like to have rushed away somewhere last time to have a good cry. I did feel you leaving me. I love you more every time, I think. You will know now whether you have lost or won the final tie for the cup. I am glad your leg is all right. I wish I could have watched the match today. I'm sure it would have given me great pleasure, love, to see my husband play. I am glad you never feel low or downhearted long, love, when I am with you. I hope to make you always feel so, and be your comforter and consoler, my darling. So you must not get despondent, and we will both look forward to a happy wedded life. I think Mary and Lizzie Bradshaw and I are going for an early walk tomorrow morning. I wish you were going to take me instead. We have not had ours yet that we said we would have last summer. Then to school and church, the afternoon and evening to myself. I do wish you could have been here to take me out, darling. But I shall see you this Sunday after, and you will have that pleasure then. I find I did not answer your question about the bedroom suite. I do like light things, but I thought if Mother gave us a set of drawers, we would buy dressing and wash tables to match. They would be rather dearer. She has not given them yet, so perhaps we had better not depend on them. I think the suite, although, is very cheap for £6, but we will talk it over at Easter. We will manage somehow about the furniture, love. Of course we cannot get all we wanted in Sheffield, and I should like to help you choose the furniture and also to get my home a little bit ship-shape form before I settle in it. I will tell you the plan I have thought about, that Polly and I would come over for a week or two before the time and get lodgings for a few days, and then we can get things straightened. I know Polly would help me and play proprietary. Would that do you think, love? I have not time for more, so good night, darling. A wifely kiss for you. I remain always your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. Fred did indeed play in the rescheduled Cleveland Cup final, which was played on the 1st of April, and I tracked down a write-up of it in the Athletic News for Wednesday, 5th of April, 1882. The headline reads, Cleveland Association Challenge Cup final tie, Redcar v Middlesbrough. It will be remembered these clubs fortnight ago played an undecided match, each scoring 3 goals after some of the most exciting play ever witnessed. At the meeting of the executive of the association, they were ordered to renew the fight again on April the 1st at Middlesbrough. During the past week, the final tie has been an absorbing topic of conversation in the Iron Town and adjacent villages, and partisan feeling ran very high. In the first half, Harrison, by means of pretty play, scored the first and only goal for Redcar. Score was not equalised until the second half was reached, Pringle doing the needful for Middlesbrough. Just as everyone was beginning to think that a drawn game would again result, Bourne dodged the Redcar backs and scored the second goal, which left Middlesbrough winners 2-1. The article finishes with the team listings, including Fred Shepherd as one of the forwards. Although not fully reported in the article, the somewhat febrile atmosphere of the match appears to have resulted in rambunctious behaviour from the spectators. This seems to have literally put Fred off his stride, as he unhappily explains in this next letter. 21 Church Street, Middlesbrough, April the 2nd, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your nice letter yesterday, love. It is very kind of you, my darling, to give me so much pleasure. As I have said before, I will remember you for it in my will. I am sorry to hear that Ginny Reckless is not to have even a day's holiday at Easter. She will not be able to go to Warncliffe with us. I am glad to hear that you will not grumble at me for not having saved £20 as I thought. You are a dear, considerate darling. I am glad to hear that you have been preparing for my coming, love, and sorry to hear that we damaged the chair so much. You see, you are so heavy, love. However, we will stick to the sofa in future. I am sorry to hear that your father is not so well and that Morris is ill too. I hope they will both soon recover. With reference to your treatment of Mr. Walker, I don't think I quite understand about the question. So we'll reserve my opinion until Easter if you care to mention it then. As far as I can see, I don't think it was necessary for you to shake hands with him. I look at it in this light. He was never a friend of yours, but a friend of the family through your Emma. Of course, when his attention to Emma ceased, he fell back to a casual caller at your house, just as anyone else might. And it is not usual with you, I know, love, to shake hands with callers. So perhaps to a certain extent your mother was right. I don't think I should have gone contrary to your people's wishes in such a trivial matter, wifey, because it was not really necessary that you should show him that you thought he had done the right thing. You see, love, the whole thing throughout was outside your concern altogether. I don't know whether I have clearly explained this. It is rather difficult in writing, but we shall perhaps have time to discuss it at Easter, if we are not otherwise engaged, my darling. I so forget everything else but ourselves, as is usual when we are together. I hope you will not be offended with me, love, for not quite agreeing with you. I received your loving letter this morning, darling. I can always rely on getting one from you for Sunday. It is very kind of you, love. I hope with you, love, that John Mies will be able to go with us on the Monday to Warncliffe. It will save time on the Tuesday. I do remember our trip to Warncliffe, love. It was damp, but we enjoyed ourselves. And I feel sure that no matter what kind of weather it is this time, we shall still enjoy ourselves, darling. We are all in all to each other, my wife, and will always be faithful and true. I wish, like you, darling, that we could seal it with the usual kiss. I do remember the night, darling, when I told you the old, old story, and you said you loved me as I did you. I shall never forget it, wifey, and like yours, my love for you then was nothing to what it is now. I am sure you will show your love for me, darling, when you are my wife. You have always done so since I told you the story. And I feel sure you will be a real helpmeet to me, love. Oh, my darling, I do love you so much. I would give anything to be with you today, to kiss your dear face and hear you say you loved me as much as ever. I think, like you, my darling, that the time has gone slower than ever this time. But it only wants 6 more days, love, and then I shall be with you. I feel much better today when I think that next Sunday I should be with you, wifey. I shall look forward to seeing you at the station, darling. I like to see you first and last, love. I expect Alvy's young lady will be there, so we shall have a general introduction. With respect to the football match yesterday, love, I am sorry to say we lost 2-1. We ought to have won as we got the first goal, but our fellows did not play up at the finish and they got the second goal about 5 minutes before the finish. I played as well as I could, but I cannot play as well as I could at Sheffield. I have not had so much exercise and cannot run so fast now as I could at the beginning of the season. We are defeated, but not disgraced, love. I don't like the Middlesbrough spectators at all. 9 out of 10 would be on the side of Middlesbrough. And if one of the Middlesbrough men knocked one of our men over, it was good play and got cheered. If one of our men knocked one of the Middlesbrough men over, it was considered bad play and they hooted us. I was hooted several times, an insult that I never suffered in Sheffield all the times that I have played. It made me feel rather wild at the time, but I put it down to their ignorance of the game and their one-sidedness. If I had joined Middlesbrough, of course, everything I did would have been right. But saying that I didn't, they feel justified, I suppose, in hooting me when I play the best I can for my own side, even against theirs. I should very much have liked you to have seen the match, love. I thought it was a beautiful day, but I know you would have not liked to have heard them hoot me. It seems I have rather disappointed the Middlesbrough people in not doing something extraordinary. They watch me like a cat watching a mouse and prevent me from doing anything great, and then they are disappointed at me not doing it. I wish I had been able to take you out this morning, love, instead of Mrs. Beardshaw, but we will have our promised walk next Sunday morning, love. If I stay Saturday night at our house, I should like to stay every night except Tuesday night at your house, darling, but I don't know how that would suit them. We will have a good long talk about everything at Easter Wifey, and then I shall have some good news to tell you about the future. I think your plan about Polly and yourself coming here a very good one, if it will not be too much trouble for her to do so. I don't like to put people to a great amount of inconvenience. I received your wifely kiss, darling, and return you one. I am anxiously looking forward to 3 days, bliss love. Only 6 more days, and they will soon go, wifey. You have not mentioned what I am to bring you, love. Have you forgotten it? It is very dull here today. I did not go to church this morning. I was not up early enough, as I felt rather tired after yesterday. I do love you, my darling wifey, and remain your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. Handsworth, April the 4th, 1882. My own darling husband, I received your letter yesterday and paper this morning, for which I thank you. I shall be very happy to be remembered in your will for giving you pleasure, but I would rather have the kisses you promised for Easter than be so remembered, and which I know you'll give me. I see, love, I have not quite put it clearly to you about Mr. Walker. We will, as you say, discuss it at Easter, if we have time. Of course, love, it was my heavyweight that broke the chair. Your 11 stones could not possibly have helped at all. You are so right. Father is not very much better. The doctor called in last night, and he said it was inflammation. He does not keep in bed. He is going about. Morris is going on very nicely. I should have written to you yesterday, but had to go to Mrs. Folding's. We had heard that Mrs. Barbara was very ill, so Father wanted me to go and see. As you know, it does not do to let them think you are neglecting them, being the landlady of our house. They live in Grimsthorpe Road. I started to walk and got about a mile out of my way. They seemed pleased to see me and gave me very pressing invitation to go for the whole day next time, not for the half day. They inquired after you. I think you will know who I mean. You fetched me from their house over the line at Darnell, that little farm where I was nursing the baby, and you thought I looked very nice. In fact, would make a nice little mother. I saw Lily Stevenson's baby yesterday. It has a little fat, chubby face. It is a real joy. I see by the account in the paper that your match was a good one and that you were defeated and not disgraced. I wish I could have been a spectator, but should not have liked to have heard you hooted. Their one-sidedness of opinion is not very pleasant to bear. I don't wonder at you feeling wild when they go on like that. You would have had a great stir in Billsbury yesterday on account of the boat race. I see that Hanlon has won very easily, at which the Middlesbrough people would be rather provoked. I came home by the 7:20 train last night. I called at your house. Your mother was not very well. Louisa, Emily, Lily and Walter had gone to the sermons at a chapel in Darnell, so did not see them. John brought me home into Handsworth. They are always very anxious about me getting home safely. Now I have not you to take care of me, darling. Mary Beardshaw and I did not go for our walk last Sunday morning. I went to school, and then in the afternoon I read. Church again in the evening. Emma Gill came up to our church. She is very much better, but I think she is scarcely fit to be out in the night air. Polly Corbett, Fanny Makin, Lizzie Williams and I took her down to Darnell. I always feel your loss more on Sundays than any day, my darling, but I was thinking about how soon I should see you, and what a pleasure it would be to have you here next Sunday. I am looking forward to meeting you at the station. I suppose you will come by the same train as usual, darling husband. I expect Mr. Alvey's young lady and I will be companions in waiting for our husbands. What is she like? I suppose you have had it over before now. Then I shall know her when I see her and study her before I have the introduction. We will have a good long walk, darling, at Easter, and I shall be very happy to hear your good news about the future. My darling, I scarcely know what you are to bring me yet. I have plenty of jewellery. You know the case you bought me last time. The scissors have turned out very bad ones. I thought, if you like to get some more, they would be very useful. I have not time for more, past time. I love you more every day. I remain your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. Royal Exchange, Middlesbrough. The North Eastern Steel Company Limited, April the 4th, 1882. I received the enclosed letter from Ted Watts this morning. I thought I could not do better than hand it over to you, and then you can make what arrangements you like, love. I shall be sure to agree with them. As you will see, he expects to be up at your house tomorrow night with Miss Dalton, so I thought if I let you know, you might arrange to be in. I was rather disappointed this morning at not receiving a letter from you, but you would no doubt be busy yesterday. I shall expect one tomorrow morning, love, or else there will be a kissing fight at Easter. Only 4 more days, love, till our meeting. I have not time for any more, my darling. I remain your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. Handsworth, April the 5th, 1882. Excuse the half sheet. I am just out of paper. My own darling, I received your letter this morning. I am glad you let me know Ted and Miss Dalton are coming up tonight, though I should not have been out as I asked Polly Rowe to tea this afternoon. You did not say whether you would like to go to Matlock. I think it would be better than Wharncliffe now, as it is so cold. You say I am to make any arrangements I like, and they will be sure to suit you, love. So I think I should arrange to go there. I shall see you all the day, and if we stopped at home, I should not be able to say much to you if I have to wait tables all the time. It is very good of them getting all the eatables ready and saving me the trouble. It has been a wretched day raining all day. It is fine now. Not long to our meeting now, darling. I will write more tomorrow. I remain your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. So it looks as if Fred's friend, Ted, and his young lady, Miss Dalton, have rather derailed things and decided that an excursion to Matlock on Easter Monday would be preferable. It's been years since I've been to Matlock, a beautiful town in the north of Derbyshire, but I wanted to know what about it in the Victorian era was attractive to day trippers, and I found this description in the National Gazetteer of Great Britain and Ireland for 1868. It describes Matlock as situated in a deep valley, the sides of which are richly wooded with pine, fir, cedar, etc. The bottom of the valley is narrow, the hills rising abruptly to the altitude of 800 feet at Masson Low, or Heights of Abraham, as they are sometimes named, from a fancied resemblance to those of Quebec. The baths are about 1.5 miles southeast of the town of Matlock and near the station on the Manchester, Buxton, Matlock and Midland Junction Railway, which runs frequent excursion trains during the summer season, thus affording easy access to the pleasure parties from the neighbouring towns. Among the various places of attraction are Cliff House, Old Bath, Dungeon Tor and High Tor. This last is 396 feet in height and commands a fine prospect. Also Cumberland, Rutland, Devonshire, Speedwell and other caverns. The Lover's Walk is situated on the opposite side of the river and consists of various pathways cut through the dense woods, all of which lead to certain points where the beauties of the dale are seen to their best advantage. There are many etchings, paintings, postcards, and now Instagram photos of the iconic and spectacular view of High Tor above the River Derwent. I'll find some of them and share them on the My Love Letter Time Machine Instagram. I love Fred and Janie's description of picnic food as eatables, and I'm now wondering what they might have consisted of. Trying to research this, again, like many other subjects, turns up the habits of the middle and wealthier classes and doesn't shed any light on what a group of ordinary working class people might take. I'm imagining it would probably be pies from the local baker or butcher, easily portable. Royal Exchange, Middlesbrough, the North Eastern Steel Company Limited, April the 6th, 1882. My own darling, I received your loving letters of yesterday and this morning. You are a dear little love. I will kiss you strongly. I have not time to write much today. We are so busy. I should have written last night but went to a football dinner at Redcar. We'll give you all the particulars when I come over. I did not say what I thought about going to Matlock because I was rather doubtful how the train ran. Of course, if they are convenient, I shall be pleased to take you. I received the enclosed letter from John Mies about next Tuesday. I have written to say I will let him know for Tuesday whether you will be able to go. I should very much like to take you, love. I remain as ever, your loving, true and faithful husband, Fred. Royal Exchange, Middlesbrough, the North Eastern Steel Company Limited, April the 7th, 1882. my own darling wife. I'll come by the usual train tomorrow. I shall look forward to seeing you at the station if you can possibly get there. Only another day, love, and then we meet. We are working very hard today. It is the first Good Friday I have ever had to work. We are the only people working in the exchange, and I think in the town. All the shops are closed, and it is as near Sunday like possible. It is a beautiful day. I wish you were here, darling, then I could take you to Saltburn or Redcar. I have not got the letter you promised me, darling, for today. I feel rather disappointed. But I shall see you soon, and then we shall not want any letters, shall we, darling? Oh, I do love you so much, my darling wife. Only 24 hours, love, and then I can kiss you 150,000 times and shall enjoy every one of them. I remain, my own darling, your loving, true and faithful husband, Fred. And so, as we leave the Easter of 1882, and Janie waiting at the station for Fred's train to come in and their longed-for reunion, we come to the end of season two of this podcast. I seem to be ending a season when Fred and Janie get back together, as that feels like a natural break, and obviously we have no letters for that time. We will have to wait until season three to try and piece together what they got up to. Next time, there will be a question and answer bonus episode, and then we'll start season three the week after that, when we discover that Fred looks like he's on the verge of falling out with his landlady and might have to find new lodgings. We also get the rather startling news that there was a coal miners' fight outside the Cross Keys, which resulted in the assault of a police officer. Thank you again for listening to my love letter time machine, which was written and produced by me. The title music is called Delicate Waltz and written by the talented Neil Cross. As I mentioned before, perhaps you could show the podcast some support by clicking on the ratings, leaving a review, or sharing it with someone you think might enjoy it. And if you'd like to write to me, you can at myloveletterTimeMachine@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.